Welcome to the Portland City Council. Before we begin the official proceedings of the council, we have a special person we're honoring today. And Jamie, after you show everybody to their seat, could you come up and take a seat up here, please? Yes. You know, Jamie and I go back a long ways. When I was a young police officer in the Brooklyn neighborhood, I met Jamie, and not through an official capacity, but because he was an activist in the neighborhood, and I got to know him and respect him even as a young man. I thought he was just doing a tremendous job. And over the years, I've watched Jamie, and he's been one of those unsung heroes in our community. He stays in the background, but he gets the job done. And so to honor him today, I would like to read an official proclamation. Whereas Portland honors its residents who show leadership and devote their lives to working for the betterment of the community, and Jamie Partridge has had an extensive background in service, advocacy, and engagement in the area of social justice in Portland. And whereas Jamie Partridge has served Portland not only in his capacity as a mail carrier over the last 24 years, but as an active member and leader in the National Association of Letter Carrier Branch 82. Whereas Jamie Partridge was a co-founder of the Portland chapter of Jobs with Justice, a national campaign for workers' rights and to end economic injustice, and to continue to donate his time as a volunteer. Whereas Jamie Partridge has also worked on behalf of all Oregonians in his efforts with others to advocate and organize for the increase of the minimum wage in his capacity as a leader of the Oregonian Livable Wage Coalition. Whereas Jamie Partridge, night after night, continues to donate his time and energy to supporting various social justice efforts throughout Portland, including volunteering for organizations like Stand for Children, KBOO Radio, the Rainbow Coalition, Community Alliance of Tenants, Northwest Tree Planters, and Farm Workers United, Oregon Action, and a multitude of others. Whereas Jamie continues to be a leader in the areas of advocacy for education, health care, labor, social justice, and racial justice. Jamie Partridge has time and time again demonstrated his vision and commitment, as well as his generosity and humility. Now, therefore, I, Tom Potter, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby declare December 3rd, 2008, as an official day of appreciation for Jamie Partridge, and I encourage all residents to observe this day. That's it. Yeah.
I don't know if I want to sit and talk to you folks or talk to you folks, but I want to thank you. I guess this is where I'm supposed to be. Tom, Randy, Sam, Dan, Nick. I'm a community organizer. I confess.
You're presidential material then, aren't you?
And a labor organizer. And there are hundreds of more deserving organizers in this city, and many of them in this room. But as we all know, organizing is about relationships and building friendships, and I just happen to have known the mayor for 40 years, back when you were a cop on the beat and doing community policing when we didn't have a word for it yet. So I'll accept recognition on behalf of community organizers. And organizing is such an important work, and as you said, behind the scenes and often unrecognized. Some of it is paid, some of it is unpaid. I've done both, mostly unpaid. And as you said, I've been a mail carrier for 25 years, and I worked as a grocery clerk and as a lab tech and as a garbage hauler and a daycare worker. So I'm, basically you know, working class guy who, I'm not even really very outgoing. I'm pretty shy, actually. But
it doesn't sound like these people believe that.
But I, you know, I was lucky enough to be a child of the 60s. And my sense of outrage about the wrongs of the world were lifted up by this mass movement of, you know, struggle for peace and justice. And I had these role models, and I had these people who, you know, held my hand and showed me how to knock on doors, how to talk one-on-one with the people I work with, how to pull together a meeting, how to, you know, recruit volunteers, how to build leadership, how to build an organization, how to put together a coalition. And I learned, I was shown, you know, people held my hand and they showed me how to mobilize organized people against organized money, direct action to shake up government and business for justice for working people. It's been a fabulous life. You know, as I'm going into my 60s, I just hope I can continue to do, you know, just to do this work. Anybody, really. I mean, we're all good, caring people. And anyone with the kind of support can learn. Be an excellent organizer, can learn to be a leader, can learn to change the world. And this is a very exciting time that we live in. You know, there's a lot of new young people involved in the process, and I just hope I can be an inspiration and a guide, you know, with this new wave of change makers. So thank you again for the recognition.
Thank you, Jamie Partridge. You folks are welcome to stay or leave as you so desire.
I got asked to come and say a couple words. Is that okay?
About Jamie?
Yeah.
Oh, please. Please introduce yourself.
I'm Margaret Butler. I'm the director of Portland Jobs with Justice, and I'm so excited that you've done this for my friend Jamie. He deserves it more than anyone I know, so thank you so much for giving me a minute to say a few things. I could talk for 3 hours about Jamie and the contribution he's made, but I won't. Instead, I'll show you three pictures and talk for a couple of minutes. When I first met Jamie, he recruited me to be the treasurer of the Labor Committee on Central America, so he was organizing my involvement already. And then a bunch of us worked together to build the Jobs with Justice chapter, and for the first 5 years it was an all-volunteer operation, and Jamie was the glue that held it together. He was the consistent person. He managed the database. He was the secretary. He had a lot of ideas. He pushed people into action over and over again. And the first picture I wanted to show you was Jamie's role in the minimum wage victory in 96 and then the living wage campaign. In 1995, Jamie organized a coalition to take a living wage agenda to the legislature, and we didn't get a hearing on any of those bills. It included an increase in the minimum wage. So the minimum wage campaign came out of that, and without Jamie, that would not have happened. And then the living wage campaign, he organized J with J volunteers to collect 5,000 signatures in 5 weeks on a petition saying, we don't want to use our tax dollars to keep people in poverty. People who are contracted with the city and county should make a living wage. And so our living wage policies were improved with friendly city and county officials. But Jamie did the work to make that happen and led it. And so he's one of the hardest working people I've ever met. and he's very persistent. I've worked for 31 years in the labor movement in Portland, and Jamie has seniority on me. So the second picture is immigrant rights work, one of our more recent battles, Jamie and Lolo leading the singing on May Day 2006 after the 30,000-person march, and then testifying at city council on behalf of immigrant workers, always raising the bottom, thinking about the most vulnerable workers in our community. And the third one is Jamie brought a lot of fun into all of our work. Here he is as Elvis, protesting corporations not paying their fair share on tax day in 97. He's Marie Antoinette during the minimum wage campaign, and you'll have to ask me the story because I can't tell it now. It's too long. And he does a great George W. Bush impression. So thank you so much for giving me a chance to help honor Jamie.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Elsie Hansen. Solidarity greetings to you, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Mayor-elect, fine commissioners, my fellow citizens and activists from the National Association of Letter Carriers, Branch 82, and the Oregon AFL-CIO. I used to say that Jamie was one of the most brave people I know. In fact, I think I've told him that a bunch of times. He always says, why? Well, it's because when we used to go to national conventions, Jamie would get up there and propose something that was considered to be outrageous. And there are 7,000 people at our conventions. It's a very big room. There are huge video things. And the old national president would ridicule Jamie, literally ridicule him from the mic. And I have seen 7,000 people shout him down. And you know what he did? What did he do? He went right back up there and did it again, and then he came back 2 years later with the same bill, and then he tried another one, and then he came back with three more, and about a decade later, pretty soon, the new national president was saying, Jamie, is that you? And appointing him to represent us in the election work that we have been doing. Jamie Partridge is now an honored member of the national NALC when once he was scorned. A good lesson. That's his persistence. That's his truth. But also, he's pretty fun. He taught me a lot about how to organize members. About a decade or so ago, we were trying to figure out a community action, some kind of member internal education. How management's pushing us for unfair speed up, violating the contract. What do you do? Well, we decided we would inform the rank and file of their rights and possibly create a symbol. It says, conscientious effort, M39112.24, just to show your bureaucracy. And so we put a whole bunch of people in these buttons. And why did we pick the button project? Because Jamie happened to own his own button-making machine.
Jamie's father, John Partridge, is here today, and his fiance. So thank you both for being here to celebrate with him. I'm going to move to the formal part of our council agenda today. So thank you all for being here. The City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Potter.
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity they are authorized to represent. Please read the first communication.
Item 1649, request of Roger P. Gron to address Council regarding Portland Development Commission policies.
And then some historical transits and oh. I really like
Please state your name for the record, sir, and you have 3 minutes.
Roger Gron, Sherwood, Oregon. I am a contractor and developer and so on. When I started building, I'm building 30 units of what are considered affordable housing on 82nd and Powell, just off 82nd and Powell. When I first started this project, I was informed of the various programs and what have you that PDC has. And so I went down and investigated all that. The upshot of it is that the policies are self-defeating, and that eventually my lender said to me, if you want to sign on with these agreements and you want to participate in these programs, that's fine, but we're out. We want no part of any of this, which, of course, makes it impossible to deal with. The requirements and the thought process that goes on at PDC is so completely unrealistic and so completely out of touch with reality that they're useless, completely useless. So I'm building this on my own. I'm having plenty of troubles with the city. I'll be back to talk about that more. But the interesting part of it is that the city is trying to build affordable housing. There was a big article in the paper Sunday about you have 1,043 units, and they average $248,000 a piece. I'm building them for less than a third of that, and so do all my contemporaries. Less than a third. And where does all that money go? I don't know. I'm doing them for under $80,000 a door. You're doing them for $250,000. Where's the money go? It sure doesn't help the people. And how many people in this town live in $250,000 house? Probably not the bulk of them. Thank you.
Please read the next.
1650, request of Daniel J. Shea to address council regarding Sanctuary City for Soldiers of Conscience.
Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Okay, my name is Daniel J. Shea, Portland born and raised, and I'm with Veterans for Peace, Chapter 72 here in Portland, and I'm coming here to propose, like Jamie Partridge, who is also one of my great friends and mentors, a proposal to the City Council to declare Sanctuary City, Portland, a sanctuary city for soldiers of conscience. Now, I want to approach this in a couple of ways. One, first to tell you my own experience. I'm a Vietnam veteran, 1969. I was a machine gunner in Vietnam. And through my own experience of going through war, I came back with being exposed to Agent Orange. I had a child born in 1971, Casey Allen Shea. He was born with congenital heart disease, with a cleft palate and other abnormalities. At the age of 3, in 1981, he had to go for surgery. And this was due to my exposure to Agent Orange. I had a daughter that was born just 14 months after Harmony Shea. But when Casey went for surgery, the last things I remember was that he went into surgery with his arms out saying, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy." These were the last words I heard. He went into surgery, went into a coma for 7 weeks, and I spent every day at his bedside until that moment in which he eventually gave up his breath and died in my arms. At that moment, I had a sort of epiphany about children of war and what that experience was and what it meant to me and to how war reaches out beyond the time past at the end of that war and affects people. And from that time on, I began to be a peace activist. I didn't realize for many years that I had post-traumatic stress. And today I learned that through Veterans Through Peace and others, that we have veterans who are coming back that are with post-traumatic stress, 320,000, 300,000 with brain traumatic injuries. And we have veterans who realize that this war was illegal and is a war of aggression and have rejected through their own consciousness to reject that war and are now at a point in time where they say that they will no longer support that and are being persecuted by their own country for taking that position. This is Human Rights Week. This is a great opportunity for people to take a look at these veterans and support them. So we ask that the council be a part of that. Just this morning, I was watching a movie of a young man in South Africa who stole a car, killed a woman, and as he took off, with not realizing this child was in the car. And at that point, as he took off, I began to realize that America has forgotten, like the veterans, that they are the baby in the back seat. And so that I asked the city council to please stand up and support a resolution, and my other colleagues will give you more information on that. Thank you.
#1651, request of Megan Brooker to address council regarding making Portland a sanctuary city for war resistors.
Hi, my name is Megan Brooker. I'm with the PDX Peace Coalition and with Military Families Speak Out. And I'm also here to talk to you about the Sanctuary City Resolution. This is a resolution we've met with several staff people for you commissioners. We've also met with Mayor Potter about it. It's an idea to protect the rights of soldiers who refuse to fight. We understand that we have no power over the federal government or the military. If they choose to pursue a soldier who's gone AWOL, it's within their rights to do so. But Portland is a city who is against this war. We passed a resolution against this war, and we feel because of that, we need to support those soldiers who are also against this war and taking the brave position to speak out against it. And therefore, we don't think that our local government, our local police, should be cooperating with the federal government on that. And if a soldier is pulled over on a traffic stop or some other violation, we don't think that our police should turn them over to the military. We think this is along the same lines as the Joint Terrorism Task Force, which Portland has opted out of, which protects illegal immigrants. Our police don't cooperate with federal government on that. We think it's along the same lines. Basically, you know, our local police can choose to, if something pops up, to just not say anything about it, and we feel that's within their rights to do so. The reason that we think this is important is because, like I said, we need to support our veterans. There's many reasons why soldiers might resist. Some are soldiers of conscience who have moral objections to this war, and we need to stand beside them. Others are soldiers who have fought in this war already. They may have suffered multiple tours. They may have post-traumatic stress syndrome. The suicide rates for soldiers are through the roof right now, and much of that is due to post-traumatic stress disorder. There are soldiers like Suzanne Swift from Eugene, Oregon, who was raped by her commanders in the military and could not put herself back in that position. We think that the military now is volunteer. We don't have a draft like we did during Vietnam, and so there's less people who are outraged about sending people over and less supportive of the people who choose not to fight. But the military is not all volunteer. We have a backdoor draft. We have a poverty draft. We also have something called stop loss. My brother is a specialist with the U.S. Army, serving his second tour in Iraq right now. His contract is up. It's expired. He no longer wants to be there. But the military is the one job you get arrested if you choose to quit. That's not fair. We have the possibility now to stand beside these soldiers and have our local police just turn the other cheek. Just let them go. Let them live freely here in Portland. And that's why we want to do this. We've been collecting signatures. We have over 3,000. We'll soon be turning them into you. We're still collecting signatures, and we just hope that you will take this resolution seriously. Thank you.
Thank you. Folks, if you wish to show support, please put your hands up in the air rather than clapping. Thank you.
1652, request of Kelly Campbell to address council regarding making Portland a sanctuary city for soldiers of conscience.
My name is Kelly Campbell. I work with the American Friends Service Committee here in Portland, and I'm also part of the PDX Peace Coalition. And I want to thank you for this time to address council on this important issue. And I also want to thank the City Council for the important steps that you have taken in opposing the war in Iraq, in opposing going to war in Iran, in being a city for peace. I think Portland has really been a leader in this area, and I think this is another opportunity for Portland to kind of step up and be a leader, our city government, as well as the people of Portland, who've really shown that they are against war, for supporting veterans and for supporting peace. I think it can be easy for those of us who aren't in the military to sit back and say, we're against the war, it's terrible, it's far away, and now that we have the Obama administration, perhaps it will end. Unfortunately, as we've heard a little bit from Megan and her brother's situation, that's not so easy for folks who are in the military, many of them who are serving second, third, fourth tours as we speak. And I think that taking a step as a city to say we support those soldiers of conscience who say they're refusing to go back, those soldiers who say they can no longer be part of this, that's a very difficult step, and there are very few who actually can take that step. But I think having some support from the city will encourage and help those soldiers who are considering that step and knowing that they are supported by their community. As Megan said, we have met with many of your staff and appreciate that, and we met with Mayor Potter recently and really appreciate his time. We did hear, unfortunately, Mayor-elect Adams from your staff that they had declined to meet with us, citing that we'd be looking to our national government to deal with issues of peace from now on. And Commissioner Leonard said something similar to the Oregonian, kind of this idea of, you know, now we have a new administration, we have a new chance. I would submit that I think it's important to consider that the message of the Obama campaign and administration was not to sit back and wait for change to come from the top. He was a community organizer, as many of us are, and talked about people making change. And so I do think it's important for us on this issue and on others to not sit back as a city and say, well, we're just going to wait and maybe the president will take care of these issues, but that we seriously consider what vision we bring and how we can support an overall change in this country. And I would suggest that something like this Sanctuary City Resolution could be one way to do that. As Dan has mentioned, it's Human Rights Week, and I think it's appropriate we're here because soldiers do have human rights. When I was in Berlin last year, I met with some members of the German parliament who are actually working on an EU level to protect soldiers who are on bases, American soldiers who are on bases in Europe because of stop loss, that's actually considered slavery under European law, that it's actually a violation of human rights. And I think thinking about soldiers' rights as human rights is important for us. So I would ask for a commitment that you consider working with us on this resolution. I'll give you a copy of the draft language right now. We're certainly open to changes. And finally, just to say, we did have a young soldier, Christopher Martini, who's with Iraq Veterans Against the War, who had signed up to testify after me, and he was called into work. And so we do have Benji Lewis, his colleague, who is a Marine who served two tours in Iraq, who would like to take his 3 minutes. I know that's against the rules, and we don't want to push it, but just to mention that Benji is here and that there are Iraq Veterans Against the War here in town that are supportive of this issue and some of whom are actively resisting war right now. So thank you. Can I give you the resolution?
Please give it to the council clerk. Thank you. Thank you, folks, for coming in to testify today. Going to move to the consent agenda. Do any commissioners wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Does a member of this room wish to pull any specific item from the consent agenda? Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read the 9:30 time certain.
Item 1654. Authorize intergovernmental agreements with local governments to accept funding for the Green Development Resource Center to be housed in the Office of Sustainable Development.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor, and members of Council. The Green Development Resource Center provides an umbrella for a regional partnership around green building between Metro, the City of Portland, Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas counties. The hotline went live in September of 2007. Currently, the Resource Center consists of a phone line, an email hotline, and a website. Staff promptly answer questions about green building and sustainable site development practices with unbiased technical assistance, design advice, and examples and links to incentives. We get calls from out of state and even from out of the country. I'm very pleased to see the successful partnership between the governments and Metro, I should say, and Metro Councilor Rex Burkholder and Susan Anderson, OSD, are here to provide a little more information about the work.
Thank you, Council. I'm Susan Anderson, Director of the Office of Sustainable Development. With me here is Councilor Rex Burkholder and Valerie Garrett, who is the Green Development Resource Center. So far this year, we've had more than 75,000 hits on our new website. The website is called buildgreen411.com, and more than 1,400 direct inquiries to the phone hotline, which she has answered. About half of the calls are coming from homeowners. A significant number are from contractors, realtors, design professionals, and others in other businesses from around the metro region. So what are these people calling to ask about? Top questions are about home insulation and heating, LEED certification, rainwater harvesting, how to find less toxic materials, where to get classes, where to learn more, and how to find various recycled and or healthy materials. People don't just call once. Many often are becoming, I think, her best friends as they go on calling her over and over again to find out more assistance on how to build their home, how to do their remodel, and or to start up when they're working on a new business startup. People hear about the hotline in a variety of different venues. We work with all sorts of different partners and the trades to get the word out. Besides working with Metro, we work closely with Washington and Clackamas County. All sorts of street fairs and home shows and neighborhood newsletters, working with the Home Builders Association and others. We get all sorts of questions every day from the kind of mundane, what kind of insulation should we use, to the somewhat unusual questions like, can I find an energy-efficient kitty door, or can I wrap my whole house in plastic? So she gets a question every day that does make her smile. Luckily, we do have our own LEED accredited professional there to pick up the phone, and this is Valerie. She's our in-house expert. She's backed up by three other people in our office who are LEED accredited professionals who provide her backup on questions of other technical issues to offer additional expertise. So together, they have dozens of years of experience. I want to especially thank Councilor Rex Burkholder for his partnership on this, and also Bryce Jacobson with Metro, who is here, and Elisa Kane and Valerie, who have shared their talents and their expertise that they've gained over the years and have decided to work with the City of Portland to provide that expertise to others. Now I'll turn it over to Rex.
Thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. This is actually a wonderful thing to celebrate in terms of governments being able to work together and be smart. City of Portland has taken the lead in quite a few areas, and everybody wants to take advantage of the work you've done. Yeah. And this is a way for actually making sure that the taxpayers of Portland aren't being, well, unfairly taken advantage of, maybe, or just helping other people out by having Metro and the two other counties putting some dollars into this program. We've been able to expand that program in a way that keeps City of Portland whole, keep services good for the City of Portland residents, but also helps out the region. Metro, as you know, is very concerned with a lot of issues dealing with sustainability or solid waste, preservation of natural areas, sustainable living in general in terms of things we do. Yet there's no real reason why there shouldn't be a corporation like this that goes on to take advantage of the great work that any individual jurisdiction is doing by pooling resources. And I think that's the good part about this. It complements a lot the work that we do, especially on the other end of things. This is the green building side. We do a lot about, well, what's left over, the construction demolition debris, and how do we recycle that and reuse that. We support groups like the Rebuilding Center and such to take care of that side. So it's very complementary. We think that what's really positive about this, that this hotline assists callers in the considering alternative options that they have in a very positive way, that helps promote that behavior change. And I think right now, especially with the issues of energy, climate change becoming so in the news, but also in people's consciousness, that this type of information is really critical. And we're really glad that you guys are doing it and that we can support making it go the whole region. I think it's a really positive thing. We also, there's a couple other things here that we want to talk about, which is going the next steps in the future. One is obviously continuing the partnership on this level here, supporting the Green Building Hotline. The other ones which are looking at, how do you expand this? Because as Susan mentioned and Commissioner Salzman mentioned, you guys get calls from all over the state as well. So I think that's one thing that we want to help look at is how do we actually get more resources so that this great resource can be shared around the state, because it does receive inquiries from throughout the country. The other things that we're looking at in terms of improving this is increasing outreach and collaboration with Metro's other programs that we have. We have a master recycling program. We have Nature Neighborhoods program, which has nature-friendly design work and assistance to residents and businesses to build in more friendly ways with nature. Then also looking at how do we reach out to other audiences and minority communities, low income, and those that really green building is, you know, does that mean it's painted green type of people and say, well, no, that means these types of things. We want to save energy, save water, everything else. So we want to work, continue working collaboratively with the City of Portland to increase the reach as well as the depth of this program. But again, it's I really appreciate the City of Portland's willingness to say that this is a resource that we can share, just make sure that we can afford to do it. And the fact that we've been able to make that happen has been a really proud accomplishment on our side. Thanks.
Valerie, did you want to, since you are the center, did you want to add anything?
Story. I want to hear a funny story.
Well, I'm just very glad to be here, and thank you for the opportunity, Mayor and councilors. I've been doing this for just over a year now, and I love my job. It's very, very exciting to be in this climate, be able to help people and answer the phone and all the different kinds of questions I get. I never know who's on the other side of the phone when they call. But so especially with energy efficiency and weatherization and rainwater harvesting, which are all being supported. We have so many resources here in this region, and I'm just so excited to tell people about them and to really promote the different bureaus and the different county services, and it's just very, very exciting. And so I'm just thrilled to be here. So thank you very much for letting me do this.
Valerie, would you like to give the phone number? This goes out to a fairly large audience, and maybe perhaps they'd like to be able to call out.
Yes. The hotline phone number is 503-823-5431. Thank you.
Thank
you. We have folks signed up to testify on this issue?
No one else signed up.
Is anyone here who wishes to testify to this issue? Thank you, folks.
Thank you. Mayor?
Please call the vote.
I just need to make, there's one small error in the ordinance that we need to correct through amendment. It has an emergency asterisk on it, but no emergency clause. I'm informed by OSD that it does not need to be an emergency ordinance, so it would be appropriate to make an amendment today just to remove the emergency asterisk and then pass it on to second reading.
You hear a motion?
I would move to remove the emergency asterisk. Second.
That. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Moves to a second reading next week. Please read the, did you want to?
Well, actually, I would like to say a few words just to say this is a great example of region-wide collaboration and supports our shared goals around sustainability and our growing green economy. I'd like to thank all the sponsors, Metro, Washington County, Clackamas County, Multnomah County, and also the staff, Valerie Garrett, who you heard from, but also Bryce Jacobson, Elisa Kane, and the OSD Green Building Program, and Metro Nature in the Neighborhoods. I look forward to building on this partnership and calling the hotline the next time I'm considering something. So thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you. Please read the 10 a.m. time, sir.
Item 1655, approve the recommended design for the Southwest Gibbs Street pedestrian bridge and direct implementation of the project.
Commissioner Adams.
Well, this is a promise fulfilled. When I ran for the position of city commissioner and was asked for my position on the tram, I said that I was not interested, as the project budget went over, I was not interested in having the city contribute any significant additional resources to get the tram built. And among the other commitments that I made was that we, as part of this project, would get the pedestrian bridge built to reconnect the walking path from the South Hills to the riverfront and South Waterfront. So I'm very pleased today that We are able to move that commitment forward, which was enshrined in the council resolution on the tram as well. And so we're going to hear today the good work of a very much citizen-based process, very well staffed by PDOT, but really led by the citizens that are going to benefit most or intended to benefit most from this project on the design that they've come up with. So thank you for your work.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, commissioners. My name is Jody Yates, and I work in the Office of Transportation. With me today is Leslie Howell of Howell Consulting. She's a member of the design team. I want to talk to you about the project, a brief overview. The city is going to construct a pedestrian and bicycle bridge over I-5. This will be adjacent to the aerial tram. We'll also have some improved pedestrian crossings on the west side, some crossings of Barber Boulevard, NATO, and Gibbs and Kelly, which is a very busy intersection. We'll have a connection on the east end of the bridge to Moody Avenue, which is where there's a streetcar stop currently, and it'll be accessible to all users, including disabled folks, bicycles, and pedestrians. Our project funding is, we have a $7 million construction budget, and it is being funded by the Federal Highway Administration with local match from the Portland Development Commission and Transportation SDCs. When we originally started this project at the direction of Commissioner Adams, PDOT formed a 13-member citizen advisory committee, primarily of South Portland Neighborhood Association residents and business owners, several of which are present here today to testify. We established a planning framework of what we wanted out of the bridge. These included aesthetics, not only how does the bridge look from I-5, but how does it look from the neighborhood as well as for users. The user experience of getting to the bridge and across it, safety for the folks on the bridge, bicyclists and pedestrians, as well as those vehicles traveling under the bridge. Cost was a primary driver in this project to stay within budget. And sustainability of using environmentally friendly materials and also using of less materials if that was possible. With this, we established a decision-making process. We have a citizen advisory committee, consists of members from the South Portland neighborhood, also a South Waterfront resident, some business owners, OHSU is a member, so we have several groups there represented, the BTA, as well as the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition, and the members of our technical advisory committee. And they met jointly 8 times to help proceed with this project. We had 2 open houses, as well as 2 local neighborhood meetings at the Ross Island Grocery Store. And then we have a project management team consisting of a CH2M Hill, Mayor Reed Landscape Architects, Kevin Peterson is the bridge architect, Alta Planning and Design assisted with the pedestrian and bicycle facilities. And we've attended Design Commission to seek advice twice to help out with this design, and we will go to Landmarks Commission in the spring. So here is a map showing basically where the bridge will be. It crosses just south of the Ross Island Bridge. The red circles indicate the pedestrian improvement locations, and it's adjacent to the tram tower. This new bicycle and pedestrian facility will connect the Lair Hill neighborhood, a historic neighborhood, to the new South Waterfront neighborhood, as well as it'll provide a connection to the river, the future greenway, and up at the top of the drawing, you can see the future light rail. This is the Porter Street, and this is where it's going to cross over. So we're also providing a potential link here for bicyclists and pedestrians to connect from southwest over to southeast Portland via that bridge as well. Also, down in the lower right, it's not indicated, but I put my cursor onto it. It's the new park that is going in as the South Waterfront Neighborhood Park. And finally, the bridge design. This is the view looking from I-5 looking to the north. Downtown's a little bit obscured to the left, but this is called an extra dose bridge design. It's a combination of a box girder and a cable stay bridge. There is not one yet currently constructed in the U.S., and there is one designed for a I-95 in Connecticut. I think we're going to beat them to the ground, so we'll be the first. There is one under construction in Vancouver, British Columbia, and this is a fairly new technology or bridge-type design. So for the City of Roses, is also known as the City of Bridges, this would be a welcome addition to our bridge types. This would be a view as a user on the pedestrian bridge. There is a curve in the bridge, and you can see Mount Hood just to the right of the tram tower, and as a pedestrian or a bicycle user coming around the bridge, you'll have a framed view of Mount Hood, and due to the planning for South Waterfront, that is a protected view corridor through there, so that will be maintained. And you can see Ross Island Bridge to your left there in the background. So an interesting challenge for this project is the difference in grade elevation from the Lair Hill neighborhood over to South Waterfront, obviously not to scale, but it shows a grade difference of we have to cross over Hood Avenue at 17.5 feet, and that's for freight vehicles, the clearance requirement there. Cross over I-5 and McAdam gives us a challenging difference of 60 to 65 feet at Moody to get down to a streetcar stop. That's equivalent to 5.5 stories, so it's a bit of a watch your first step type of thing. So as opposed to having a ramp, which we did look at, it would be a 1,400-foot-long ramp at 5% grade, and if you're in a wheelchair, it would be a very difficult trip to go. It's equivalent to 6 blocks. So instead of doing that, we're proposing to have an elevator at this location along with the stairs facility. In the future, we would not preclude not having a ramp or preclude having a ramp to go to the north. It would connect conveniently at the Porter Light Rail crossing area. That's about the 1,400-foot distance. This would be a elevator with large cabs to accommodate a bicycle and, say, a trailer that would be behind the bicycle, and then a stair facility coming down. This is the architect's drawing of a proposal that we have for this east landing, and also have an observation platform and kind of continue on with the tourism that has kind of gone with the tram tower. Be a good place for photographs and stuff. As well, there's the streetcar stop right down here, which is not really shown in this drawing.
So running the stairs in this location would be just pushing a button, right?
Yes. And we're going to have two
exercise.
Yeah, you can
choose to run the stairs.
You can choose to run the stairs.
Stairs as well.
There'll be stairs as well. You've got to have redundancy, so stairs with your elevator. So if you're like me, take the elevator up and then walk down.
We have on the stairs I forgot to ask when I got briefed. Do we have on the stairs sort of the little cycle track on the side of the stairs?
Yes, we were planning on putting something like that in. And in the event there is a power failure, we want to be able to have that accommodation.
Excellent.
Just a summary on the project. We're at 30% design, and our rough estimate for construction cost is $5.6 million. We've added on some contingency and escalation. And we're right now at a total construction cost of $7.6 million. That's a little bit higher than our construction budget, and we're already looking at ways to cut back on the $600,000, which include combining the last bridge abutment with the elevator tower, kind of bring those two together. We can have one structure there, and the engineer's already telling me that's worth about $750,000 savings. So we're moving ahead with that. Those types of items to get to within budget.
I think we're taking a little closer look at the elevator design as well.
Yeah. Just a quick review of the schedule. We started this process in April of this year, went through many bridge types and options to get to what we're recommending here. We're at 30% design now, proceeding on, and We'll do final design bid in July and August and start construction October of next year. So we'll see something on the ground this time next year.
One of the things we're talking about as part of the local stimulus package is the opportunity to fast-track projects. And so this is one of those that we're talking to the Bureau of Purchases about, being able to fast-track and get construction started even sooner. So I just wanted to let the council know that.
How long will construction take once it commences?
We're looking at a lot of members that are pieces of the bridge that can be prefabbed off-site. Right now I'm roughly estimating a year's worth of construction, potentially less depending on construction methods.
You mentioned some federal money and then a local match.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just walk us through those different figures?
The federal dollars are $9.7 million and change. Thank you. $9.7 million. From PDC, it's $578,000. And from transportation SDCs is $1.186 million. So it's roughly a 10% match to the 90% federal dollars.
So the PDC money comes out of the Urban Renewal District?
Correct.
And the SDCs already funded, or is that out of some future SDC?
No, these are funded. These are citywide SDCs, and it's funded.
Thank you.
Questions?
I was curious about what you're doing at NATO Parkway and Barber Boulevard to assist pedestrians, bicyclists, and crossing?
They'll be similar. What we're proposing right now are pedestrian crossings similar to what's on Barber further to the south, some islands, some channelization. Especially at NATO, there's a three lanes going southbound. To reduce that down to two lanes, we believe there's adequate traffic or capacity for vehicles, and then to reduce that crossing length for pedestrians. Both for NATO and for Kelly, I have to get ODOT approval. Those are ODOT-controlled facilities. So at this point, we can't say exactly what those crossings are, but that's what we're seeking.
But they're going to look like pedestrian islands, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Potentially with overhead lighting to warn vehicles of a pedestrian. Of a crossing ahead.
I think that'd be a great idea.
Yeah. Could you remind us again how this would link up with the proposed Milwaukee to Portland light rail?
If we go to the map, you can kind of see the pedestrian bridge is the red line. Then right now folks would take the elevator down, and there's a bike lane along Moody or sidewalk and travel to the north, and there'd be, this is the light rail crossing in the orange lines here. As a future project, a recommended project is to also have a ramp that would just come down this way. So we actually see a potential of a second project through there to build another ramp.
So cyclists could make the direct connection.
Or I guess you could take the streetcar?
It's not that far. I don't know if there's a streetcar stop being proposed here, but it's really not that far. It's about a quarter of a mile distance for even walking.
Since we have this map up, I was just curious to either the mayor or the mayor-elect, is we're reading about the Vestas plant. Is there a particular space on this map where they are being potentially penciled in?
They're looking at three different sites in South Waterfront. One is Block 33, and then they're looking at the still kind of amorphous Schnitzer campus.
Block 33 is the one adjacent to the park right here.
Yep. Thank you.
We do have some citizens here to testify, if there's no more questions.
Okay.
One last question. This extra-dosed model, it's not illegal, is it?
No.
No steroids involved? Okay. But is it?
We thought we would build an illegal bridge.
Yes. No, I'm just wondering, I mean.
Darn, you caught us.
You talk about it. How proven is this type of construction, I guess? I mean.
There's many examples throughout the world. There's just none in the U.S. at this point. There's probably, when I Googled it, there were 38 and they're mostly used as motor vehicle bridges, so they do exist.
Okay, at least 38 other
yes
in the world of this design.
Yes.
Okay.
And they are building one up in Vancouver, BC right now, and it's a motor vehicle bridge.
Okay.
And they're all standing.
Yes.
Well, most of them. No, they're all standing. The other is it's one of the bridge types that we're looking at for the Columbia River crossing as well.
Did you folks have a list, or did the folks sign up on the sheet?
I think
how many
she's
folks
got it.
Signed up?
We have six people.
Okay, please call the first three.
First three are William Denneman, David Snyder, and Don Bach.
So you covered yourself in case it falls down. You're a smart politician.
You have an engineer on it.
You're a smart politician.
Just covering you.
Did the?
No, I appreciate that.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, state your name for the record, and you each have 3 minutes. Anyone
William Denneman.
Please go ahead.
Okay, William Denneman. I'm the transportation chair for South Portland Neighborhood Association, and I'm also sit on the CAC for the bridge. And I want to come out right at the beginning and praise the staff and Jody Yates in particular from PDOT and the design team from CH2M Hill, because there have been a breath of fresh air. I had the experience of going through the aerial tram, and this is just totally the opposite. And
that's high praise on a low standard, isn't it?
Well, if you would have been in the beginning, you'd know what I meant. You got all the problems at the end, unfortunately.
Right. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
So that's okay. But I just wanted to, and I think that they've been very forthright and honest, and they are really a pleasant group to work with. And I wanted to say that this bridge reconnects our neighborhood. Our neighborhood has been dissected by freeways, NATO Parkway, you name it, McAdam, and everything else. And this helps get our neighborhood a little bit more like a neighborhood. And it's really important to us because we sit really close to downtown, and it has potential for the future that is tremendously enormous. But the one thing I do want to point out is that the number one criteria at both our neighborhood association and the CAC was that this bridge come in under budget or within budget. And I just want to be sure that nothing happens again like it did in the past where, you know, we're focused on the wonderful, beautiful design, which it is, and we forget that we have a limited number of dollars to work with, especially in these troubled times. But if any team can solve our problem, I think this is the team that can do it. And I just wanted to say that we appreciate you giving the neighborhood such a say in this process.
My name's David Snyder. I'm a resident, 31-year resident of Corbett Bear Hill neighborhood. I want to thank you for having a speak. I want to particularly thank Commissioner Adams for my appointment to the Citizen Advisory Committee. As Bill says, it's been a really very gratifying and interesting process. I live in one of the Victorians on Kelly Avenue. It's about a block and a half south of where this bridge is going to land at Gibbs. And been working on that house all that time, still working on it. As Bill says, the neighborhood's got a lot of potential, and I've been waiting all this time for it to really blossom, and I think this is one of the first real